On today's Bill of the Flata Show, don't ta knock it till you try it. Ravioli and Hungry Deer, all this and more. The Flata Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flata Show. Tab for my diet. Little Jose is not taking a nap. He's walking around. He has canine cognitive disorder, which is like doggy Alzheimer's. Tabalicious. It has a lot of caffeine. I can only have a couple sips of it. Otherwise, I'm like off the wall. So I'm drinking some juice here. It's a special juice that has a lot of antioxidants, and it's delicious. Listen. The bottle is sort of shaped like a figure eight. Delicious. I'll go back to have a little tab here, just a little bit, before it makes me crazy. Tab. I wish Tab had antioxidants. Okay, welcome to the Flata Show. Oops. I'm Kenty, your host. Jose's licking the floor. You can reach me at my website. Go to theflatusshow.com. Just look it up. The Flatus Show. F-L-A-T-U-S. Working on my website. Talking about my website, I want to thank Darren of Florida. Darren of Florida. Thank you so much. I love what you did. And when I get the real photos, maybe I can send them down to you so you can do the same thing. But I'll have to do something for you. I'll have to get you something, a little gift or something. Or just tell me what I need to do to do what you did. Okay, so let's see what else we have here. Okay, Darren, let me get a pen because I have a lot to talk about, and I can just mark off what I'm doing here. Hold on. Where'd I put my pen? My pen! Where did I put my pen? Oh, my phone. Christmas, where did I put my pen? It's my Renee Fleming pen. Has to be somewhere. Has to be somewhere. Okay, I have some products to talk about. Put my phone away. Did I put my phone away, Sharita? Oops. Come on, Jose. Just set some. Oh, Christmas. Okay. Let's see here, Darren. Okay, mark off Darren. Thank you, Darren. Thank you so much. We'll be seeing a whole new website soon. Okay, let's see here. Who can we talk about next? Okay, big news. My trip to Vancouver, Washington is set. I'm going to be buying the tickets this week. I will be arriving in the Vancouver, Washington, Portland, Oregon area at like 11 o'clock at night. So I don't think that is very nice to my friends, Randy and Andy. Well, Randy from the Two Guys, One Brain. He's going to put me up at his place. So it's 11 p.m. So what I'm going to do is I found a hotel room at the airport for $40 a night. And I'll stay at the airport and then go over to his house in the morning because, you know, 12 midnight is too fucking late for me. I mean, I have to get my car and drive and everything. So I have to rent a car and and fly there. So I'm going to take Delta to Vancouver, Washington. And I'm going to stay with Randy. And he's going to show me around. He said he'll show me around some places. And I'm also going to meet Rebecca Ney of Tranny Rec Radio. Hello, Rebecca Ney. You listening? I hope so. So I can't wait to see her. I can't wait to see her. And maybe I can meet Paula, Sister Paula. So I'll have to talk to... I have to talk to Rebecca Ney about that, Sister Paula. Maybe the three of us can have lunch. I'll go to Portland. Is there like a museum in Portland? I'll have to look up that too. Museum. I want to go to the fort. And there'll be some other stuff going on, so I can't wait. Can't wait to see the Two Guys, One Brain. Can't wait to see Rebecca Ney. I've been listening to their show, the Two Guys, One Brain show, for a long time, since they started, basically. And I can't wait. I can't wait. Juice. All those antioxidants. I feel my cells all rejuvenated. Talking about meeting other podcasters, one podcaster, Mikey Pod, from Mikey Pod on the Bayou. He's no longer in the Bayou. He's like Mikey Pod of the Brooklyn Bridge. He lives in New York City now, Brooklyn. And I live in Boston, and it's easy for me to get down there to the New York City area. So I want to meet Mr. Mikey Pod. So Mr. Mikey Pod, if you're listening, let me know, because I do want to come down. We can go to dinner or something. We can walk around, go to museums, or we can podcast. We can podcast in New York City. I love podcasting in New York. And I can go to the Metropolitan Opera, because I love the Metropolitan Opera. Okay, let's see here. Mark this off, mark that off, mark this off. Okay, Shop Pink, Oddcast. Darren and James, or is it Jim? Darren and Jim, I asked them a couple weeks ago if I could perform one of their songs. Like, do you have any songs that are ukulele ready? And they said, what do you want to do? And at first I thought, I don't know, Bobby Brady Pants or something like that. I don't know, something that they made up. You know, I've listened to their songs, but I figured they would know which ones fit, which ones were better for a ukulele. So then they had a song they played, Sex Zombie. And it was a neat song. Sort of like, I think I talked about this before. I think it's like from a musical about Jeffrey Dahmer. Or that's my fantasy. It's a musical about Jeffrey Dahmer, and Sex Zombie is the big song. So they sent me Sex Zombie. Or Darren did. Darren with an I. And as opposed to Darren from Florida. A lot of Darrens, you know? It's like the two Darrens on Bewitched. Give me a memento. Hold on. Okay, so Shop Pink, they sent me a Sex Zombie to play. And I have the song, and I have the chords and stuff, and I've been working on it. So just to let you know, you guys, I am working on it. And Darren gave me the artistic license to arrange it any way I see fit for the ukulele, which I am doing. That's why it's taken me a little while. Interestingly enough, here's a little information, or a little clue or something. I don't know if it's a clue. Here's a question. How do you think Sex Zombie relates to Puccini's Madame Butterfly's aria Un Bel Dì, which I sang a couple weeks ago? So that's the question. How do you think Sex Zombie relates to Un Bel Dì? There's a connection. There is a connection. Okay, next. So, anyway, listen to the Shop Pink Oddcast. Listen to Mikey Pod in the Bayou. Listen to Rebecca Ney of the Tranny Rec Radio. And listen to the Two Guys, One Brain. The next thing on my list is my trip to Pennsylvania to see my newest nephew, Mario. John and I drove down. And we went and stayed with the family, my sister. And the infant is so cute. So cute, but it's so dry in Pennsylvania. And what I did is, when I was in Massachusetts, which I've been since 92, I found this stuff called Air, A-Y-R, saline nasal jelly with aloe vera for your nasal passages. So anyway, you use this stuff, I can try doing it. Okay, listen to me. I'm going to squeeze it. I'm squeezing some out on my finger, and then you shove it up your nose. And you do it in one nostril, and you do it in the other. It's like the size of a small pea. Anyway, this stuff stays in your nose. It's like a jelly, and it moisturizes your nasal passages. And if you live in a dry state like Pennsylvania, or have dry heat, you know, for your house, you need Air, A-Y-R. It's a godsend. So anyway, we were in, brought to you by Air, nasal passages, dry as a bone. My nasal passages are dry as a Ritz cracker until I discovered Air, saline nasal jelly. I shoved that stuff up my nose, and my nose was as moist as a vagina. I don't know if that's the right image I'm trying to give. Jose's just staring at me. What do you mean, a voice is a vagina? Okay, anyway. Air is really great for your nose. So our trip to Pennsylvania, we went to the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And, My nasal passages are so much more moist. So we went over the Tappan Zee Bridge when we went down. I love the Tappan Zee Bridge. Let me just tell you that. It's the land of Rip Van Winkle. That's where Rip Van Winkle is from. Rip Van Winkle, which is really just a character in a book story. But Washington Irving was writing about that area, the Hudson Valley, the Hudson Mountains and stuff. And the Tappan Zee Bridge. I think it was built in the 30s or 40s. So that's I-287, the Tappan Zee Bridge. And from there, you take the Garden State Parkway to the Garden, to the New Jersey Turnpike, to Pennsylvania Turnpike, etc., so on. So on the way back, I noticed on the way in to Pennsylvania that we got onto exit 10 on the New Jersey Turnpike, right? This is a side note. So on the way back, we left at midnight. And I said, because John and I wanted to avoid traffic because there was a lot of traffic when we went down. So we went to, took the Pennsylvania Turnpike, fine. Got onto the New Jersey Turnpike, fine. The woman at the New Jersey Turnpike was so rude. I was like, have a nice night, bitch. But, but I think to myself, what was she doing? She works in a toll booth at midnight, so. Oh, my nose. It's so moist. So she works in the toll booth. She was not very nice. So we got onto the New Jersey Turnpike, and I'm looking for the signs to the Garden State Parkway. And wouldn't you know that I don't see any signs for the Garden State Parkway, but we come to exit 10. So I thought, exit 10. This must be the New Jersey State. This must be the Turnpike extension or whatever, the Garden State Parkway. So I get off at exit 10 and I see signs, I-287. I'm thinking, hey, I'm on the right road because, 287 is where the bridge is. I am going that way, right? So we get on to I-287. And mind you, this is now 1 o'clock in the morning. There's no one around, just maybe a truck every once in a while. It's dark. Good time to get abducted by aliens. So we're driving, and I'm like, we're driving for about a half hour to 45 minutes. No, about a half hour. And I'm like, this doesn't look familiar because the Garden State Parkway is kind of congested. You go through Orange, New Jersey, and Nutley, and that's where Martha Stewart lives, where she's from, Nutley. So we're driving on 287. It's like nowhere, right? So I tell John, I said, does this look familiar? And he's like, no, it's not. And he gets all anxious because, you know, I was a little upset too. But I knew that if we stayed on I-287, we would eventually hit the bridge. We probably would have gone out of our way a little bit. Not that much, I didn't think. So, you know, actually what I was thinking at that time, I was thinking, we're going to end up in Albany, you know, and I'll have to take Route 90. But anyway, that's out. That would be way out of our way. But that wasn't the case. So I say, let's stop. Let's go to this exit. It was, I don't know what exit was. It was Boonton. The town was Boonton, New Jersey. Boonton. And it was some accident on the road on this exit on 287, right? So we get off and it's like no one is around. It's like a ghost town. It's like the blinking, the stoplights are blinking. It was like these dirt roads. I'm like, oh, Christ, you know, how am I going to get out of here? So I'm like, let's turn around and get back on the highway. I know we're going to hit the bridge. The bridge is on 287. We haven't passed it. So as we're turning around, we see a Hess station, which is open. And we're like, oh, look, a Hess station. Let's ask there. So we go and we drive in. I park. I was driving. Jose, stop pawing at the door. So I'm trying to tell a story. He was sleeping in the back, by the way, because we took Jose with us. So we pull in, and there's a guy, like, sitting down behind the counter, and these two young guys, like, in their 20s, standing there. They have this, like, camouflage hunter stuff on, and we pull up, and they all look at us. The three of them are like, oh, Christ, you know, God, what are they saying? You know, what are they going to do? So we go in. I say, John, you get some coffee. I'll ask the guy at the counter. So I go in there, and they're just, like, staring at me because I'm a stranger. And I said to the guy, I'm like, you know, we were on the New Jersey Turnpike and we're looking for the Garden State Parkway to get to the Tappan Zee Bridge. I know 287 eventually will hit the Tappan Zee Bridge, but how far out of the way are we? So he opens up his mouth and he smiles and he has these cavities at the top, like, between the on the gum line of his teeth. Oh, and his front teeth. Oh, so disgusting. So I was like, ooh, like, I didn't want to show my disgust and, like, shock. Though I have seen that before, but it's just like, you know, it's still the shock of seeing that. And he's like, just, you're about 45 minutes from the bridge, just follow the bridge. He's staring at me, he's talking to me in this monotone voice, and all I'm thinking of is Deliverance. So my ass shuts up real tight, and I'm like, okay, let's get out of here. John gets the coffee, we're like backing out. Get in the car! Get out of here! So we left, and as soon as we left, actually one of those young guys got in the car and left too. But I don't know if he was following us because I didn't see that. But it was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre mixed with Deliverance. So that's, you'll see video. I have video of our trip down, and I have a new opening for my video, so you'll see that too. Maybe I'll put it up this week. How'd you like the ice skating videos? Did you like that? Let me know. I finished the Bible in 90 days. I don't know if I told you that, but I did it in 84 days. And I have a link. You can follow the, I have a link in my show notes of my notes I took while I was reading the Bible in 90 days. And that's it. So, okay, let's get on with the show.
Abraham meets Sarah, and they decide to use their Hebrew names instead of their English equivalents. When Joseph comes along, his name, too, is changed.
Shalom.
Shalom, Abraham.
Ani Avraham.
Ata Avraham?
Ken. Ani Avraham.
Lo. Ata lo Avraham. Ata Abraham.
Achshav ani lo Abraham. Achshav ani Avraham.
Tov, ata Avraham. Shalom, Avraham.
Shalom, Sarah.
Sarah, ani Sarah.
Achshav, at Sarah.
Tov, achshav, ani Sarah.
Shalom, Sarah.
Shalom, Joseph. Achshav ani lo Sarah, Ani Sara.
At Sara? Tov. Shalom Sara. Shalom Abraham.
Hu lo Abraham. Hu Avraham.
Mi hu?
Hu Avraham.
Ken. Ani Avraham Achshav. Ve'ata. Ata lo Joseph. Ata Yosef.
Ken. Ani Sara. Ata Yosef. Ve'hu Avraham.
Tov. Ani Yosef. Ken. Ata Yosef. Ani Avraham. Ve'hi Sara.
We hope you followed the conversation carefully and understood.
Talk about the Talmud today. I was interested in the Talmud, having read the Bible in 90 days, and I know that the first five books of the Bible are called the Pentateuch, and then there are the prophets, and there's some writings in there, and the historical accounts. So much as we know what history, that it is actual history. So I often you hear about in Judaism the Talmud, the rabbis, you know, teach from the Talmud. So I wanted to find out what that is. And the Talmud is this. This is from Wikipedia, wikipedia.org, for all your information needs. I just get a kick out of that. The Talmud is a record of rabbinic discussions pertaining to Jewish law, ethics, customs, and history. The Talmud has two components. The Mishnah, which is circa 2200 Common Era, the first written compendium of Judaism's oral law. That's the Mishnah. It was first written down in 200 AD, or 200 CE, also known as Common Era. AD means Adonai Domine, Year of Our Lord, and BC is, used to mean before Christ, I guess. I don't know. Probably meant something else. But So what we use now, I mean, what the non-religious way of denoting years is to use CE for Common Era. The Common Era is zero to now, and before Common Era, BCE is anything before zero, which is like, you know, BCE is 500 years before zero, which is the birth of Christ. So, I mean, we've been using it for so long, and I guess people want to just get rid of the religious connotations of it, so we use Common Era instead. So anyway, the second component of the Talmud is the Gemara, G-E-M-A-R-A, a discussion of the Mishnah and related Tanaitic writings, that's the Tanukh, which is the complete, is the Hebrew Bible, which is akin to the Christian Old Testament, related to the Tanaitic writings, that often ventures onto other subjects and expounds broadly on the Tanakh. The terms Talmud and Gemara, whatever, I don't know how to pronounce that. Any of my listeners are Jewish and know how to pronounce G-E-M-A-R-A, please email me a voice response at flatishow@gmail.com. You can also visit my website at theflatishow.com, and you'll find links to my email there. Gemara is often used interchangeably. The terms Talmud and Gemara are often used interchangeably. The Gemara is the basis for all codes of rabbinic law and is much quoted in other rabbinic literature. The whole Talmud is traditionally often referred to as Shas, a Hebrew abbreviation of Shesha Sedarim, the six orders of the Mishnah. So that is the Talmud. It's Judaism's oral law written down. And apparently that oral law was handed down from Moses. The Tanakh, as I already said, is the Hebrew Bible. And this is what Wikipedia has to say. Tanakh is an acronym that identifies the Hebrew Bible. The acronym is based on the initial Hebrew letters of each of the three of the texts, three parts. The Torah, meaning instruction, also called the Humash, meaning the five books of Moses, also called the Pentateuch. The Torah is often referred to as the law of the Jewish people. I didn't know that the Torah was also the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Bible, which is what? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Okay. Torah, meaning... I already read that. Okay, then the next part of the Tanakh is the Nevi'im, meaning prophets. This term is associated with anything to do with the prophets. Prophets like Isaiah, Ezekiel, Habakkuk, I think, is one of the prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, they're the three major prophets. The third part of the Tanakh is called Ketuvim, meaning writings, or hagiographa. Hagiographa. The writings are then separated into sections. For example, there are a group of history books, namely Ezra, Chronicles, and Nehemiah. Others include the wisdom books. These are Job, Ecclesiastes, and Proverbs. Poetry books, Psalms, Lamentation, and Song of Solomon. Lastly, there are other books, Ruth, Esther, and the Book of Daniel. The Tanakh is also called Mikra or Migra, which meaning that which is read. So the Tanakh, right? I have a Tanakh here. Glad to Tanakh ya. Hold on. Let me find my Tanakh. Where's my Tanakh? Where'd my Tanakh go? Where's my Tanakh? Where's that Tanakh being? Where's that Tanakh? Come on, Tanakh. Come on out of hiding. Come on. Tanakh. Where are you, Tanakh? Tanakh. I love to read the Tanakh. I love to read the Tanakh everywhere. Tanakh. Tanakh. Do, 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 do. I can't find my Tanakh. I can't find it. Tanakh. Oh, where are you, Tanakh? Oh, where are you with three parts? The Torah, Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Tanakh, Tanakh. Oh, where is my Tanakh? My Tanakh. I can't find it. Wait, is that it? It's hiding behind Moby Dick. Why are you hiding in there, little Tanakh? Oh, come on out of there. It's hiding. It's a shy little... hiding behind Moby Dick. Okay, here's the thing. Where's... okay, NIV Bible, where are you hiding? Oh, no, there it is. Okay. So the Jewish Tanakh... the Torah... let me read the Bible, the chapters. The Torah consists of the first five books, the five books of Moses. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And that's how it appears in the Christian Bible. The Protestant Christian Bible. I'm not sure how I'm sure it's the same in the Catholic edition. The prophets, however, are a little different. The prophets in the Tanakh include Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And then there are 12 minor prophets, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, Kings, the 1 and 2 Kings. They are considered historical books in the Christian Bible. They come after the first five books, which we already mentioned. The prophets come later. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, then all these other ones, Hosea and Malachi and whatever. The writings, Kativim, they come between the historical books in the Christian Bible. Okay, so the Ketuvim are the writings, and they include Psalms, Proverbs, Job, Song of Songs, Ruth, Lamentations, Ecclesiastes, Esther, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, 1 and 2 Chronicles. That makes sense, because, you know, I think I told you when I was reading the Bible in 90 days, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, those seem to, like, not fit in the rest of the Bible. So I kind of like the layout of the Tanakh better than the Christian Bible. So
why did you go read it all the time, then? Why don't you read the Tanakh instead of the Bible in 90 days?
Well, I would. But the print of my Tanakh is very small, so it's not really conducive to regular reading. Because did I ever tell you my eyes are... What the hell are my eyes? It has a name. I talked about this before. Oh, my eyes are changing. Periscopic? No, what is it? No, it's not periscopic. What is it? Anyway, you know what it is. My eyes are changing. Soon I'll need bifocals. What the hell is bothering me? I don't know what my eyes are turning into. Okay, so anyway, the next thing here, we already talked about the Tanakh. Oh, and then there's, you know, in the Catholic Bible, there's this thing called the Apocrypha. I think I have an Apocrypha around here somewhere. Apocrypha! Where are you, Apocrypha? Oh, here we go. I didn't read the Apocrypha, but, you know, I probably should read the Apocrypha. Because
all this trouble over a fat little man in a red suit.
I recorded for the most part. Okay, what am I saying here? I found the Apocrypha. And it's in my Revised English Standard Version, the one that most heretics, the version of the Bible that most heretics like to read, except I didn't read it. There are 184 pages in the Apocrypha, and they are books of the Bible, which are Esther, hold on, Ecclesiasticus, first book of Maccabees, come on, Judith, Ezra, here we go. There are 184 pages in this particular edition, I should say. Maybe I should put out a publication, the Apocrypha in 14 days, or no, 16 days. 184 divided by 12. See, 12 by 12 is 144. 144 minus 184 is 40. It's about four more, maybe three more days. So 12 is 15 days. 15 days. How's that? The Apocrypha in 15 days. And the Apocrypha has all sorts of goodies in it, like the first book of Esdras, this Tobit, Judith, the rest of the chapters of Esther. Who would have known Esther didn't finish where it did? Ecclesiasticus, or the wisdom of Jesus, son of Sirach. There's a letter to Jeremiah. There's a book of Daniel, Bell, and the Snake. Isn't that interesting? And then, of course, the first and second book of Maccabees. So, interesting. Interesting. It's almost as long as the New Testament. So the Apocrypha is a Greek word that meant hidden things. And it was used in different ways. It was hidden because it was too good to show the public, hidden because it was not good enough to show the public. And but it is books that were originally in the Greek version of the Hebrew Bible, the Septuagint, and they weren't part of the Hebrew Bible. They weren't accepted by Jews as part of the Hebrew Bible, but the early church Christians, the early church, accepted them. It's in the original Latin Vulgate. The only Christian denomination which recognizes them is the Catholic Church. Everybody else I shouldn't say everybody else, because I really don't know who everybody else is, but the Protestant branch of Christianity refutes them. Rebukes them. Rebuke you in the name of Christ, Apocrypha, out of my way, sinful heretic. So I'm going to read the Apocrypha, which also makes me want to read the Mormon Bible, because, I mean, you know, maybe there's something to it, you know? They say Jesus is going to appear in Missouri when he comes back. So anybody from Missouri listening to me, Jesus might show up there. And if you're not a Mormon, I would be careful. I would be careful, especially in Branson, Missouri, you know? You ought to be singing. You ought to have the Mormon Tabernacle Choir come to your fair city and perform there when Jesus arrives, because I think that would be good, right? I think he would like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Or maybe the Vienna Boys Choir, I don't know. No, probably the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. So, yeah, so Jesus is going to... And you'll need special underwear, too. You need the undergarments of Christ to help you keep you pure and sinful and away from sin. So I don't want to bust on the Mormons, but, you know, maybe what I can do is I can find well, the Mormon Bible is clearly in the public domain. I'll find an old copy of it, and I'll put out, read the Mormon Bible in 90 days. How's that? How's that? Would you like that? Would you like to read the Mormon Bible in 90 days? I have a Mormon Bible. I found it. And in the front of the picture, in front of the book, is this picture of a woman saying, I forget her name. She looks so squeaky clean. She's like, hi, my name is Sarah, and if you have any questions about Mormonism, please give me a call at whatever number. She even put her phone number in there and, like, an address in Utah. So I didn't do that because I bought it at a secondhand store for 50 cents because I was interested in reading it. But, you know, it's very dry, and it's not very good. It's kind of poorly written. So, I mean, you know, if God was going to reveal something to you, he would know how to use commas and stuff like that and make it a little bit interesting. I mean, you know, he is trying to get your attention, but I don't know. So anyway, let's get on to the Tanakh here. Let's get back here to this. So there's the Mishnah. Okay, we already talked about the Talmud consists of the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Mishnah. Okay, let's see here. There's the Pharisees. We talked about Pharisees before. You know, Paul was a Pharisee. And then there's also the Sadducees and the Essenes. They were groups of Jewish thinkers or thought, schools of thought, which existed around the time of the Second Temple, between the Second Temple and, like, up through 200 CE. So between 500 BCE and 200 CE, that's 700 years. We have the Pharisees, the Essenes, and the Sadducees. The Pharisees became the rabbinic school, and the Essenes. Well, the Essenes. You know, you ever hear of the Dead Sea Scrolls? There was a bunch of scrolls found near the Dead Sea in a cave, and they revealed it was writings from the time of Jesus. And it was Essene writings, I believe, and there were some Gnostic writings there. The Gnostics, that was all part of the, you know, thinking at that point, you know, at that time in history. I'm looking out the window, and there are birds living in our gutter. I don't like that. The birds are living in our gutter. The Birds are living in our gutter. You can't really see me, but there's a place where it's going. It's living in the gutter. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Little bird. Little bird. Anyway, you can see I do the show. I look out a window. Look out into the wonderful environment. Okay, so the Sadducees, or another group, they come from Zadok the priest. Zadokites, they're also called. And their rivals, the Pharisees, were said to have originated in the same time period, but have survived as the later forms of rabbinic Judaism. So the Sadducees and Essenes did not survive as such. Though, you know, you wonder if they didn't survive as maybe like the Masonic Lodge or some other like secret society of thinkers, you know. The cabal of people who are really running the world. You ever talked about that before? Some say that there's a cabal, C-A-B-A-L, of people, a small number of people, very rich, and they are the ones who control everything. Food supply, what you eat, what you think, you know, from television and movies or whatever. What do you think? Do you think there's a cabal of people out there? Well, if there is a cabal of people, I would like to ask one of them since they're very rich. You know what? Contact me. Donate some money to the Flatus Show so I can live a life of not luxury. I just want to live a life of being able to travel to New York City and go to the Metropolitan Opera and, you know, travel all over the country and spread the good word of whatever. So, so the Sadducees. Let's see. Are there Sadducees out there? Oh, hold on. The Dead Sea Scrolls. Here we go. We're talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And here it is. Let me read about the Sadducees because there's interesting stuff here. The Essenes let me just tell you about the Essenes. They flourished 2nd century B.C. to the 1st century A.D. Now, you're interesting that the Essenes article uses B.C. and A.D., whereas the other articles use BCE and CE. So the Essenes article here was written by somebody else. It's not all written by the same person. So the Sadducees, okay? The sect of the Sadducees, whence Zadokites or other variants, was founded in the 2nd century BCE, possibly as a political party, and ceased to exist sometime after the 1st century CE. So for 300 years. Their rivals, the Pharisees, are said to have originated in the same time period, but have survived as the later forms of rabbinic Judaism. Did I tell you Paul was a Pharisee? Paul, the creator of the Christian religion. And that's not the... And I mean that what most people think of Christianity is all because of Paul. And I say he's wrong. So if you're really a Christian, you need to read the Bible yourself and make your own determination and just not listen to Paul. Because Paul, when you read the Bible from beginning to end, and I say in 90 days because you have to have it all fresh in your mind, you'll realize that Paul just doesn't have it right. It's easy to discern that Paul is saying things that Scripture does not support. So... you know, you can say whatever. I'm going to read the Bible again and take more detailed notes because now that I know what Paul is a liar, I can prove it more easily. But it's even me, who's just read the Bible for the first time, can clearly see that Paul is just Paul. Paul is not Christ. Paul is really not an authority. And if you think he is, you're barking up the wrong tree, and I fear for your salvation. La lingua e gli hai pugnale, l'uomo salio che ride, e quel che spegne. Well, okay, so anyway, here we go. The Hebrew, okay, Zadok, okay, hold on. The Hebrew name Zadoki indicates their claim that they are the followers of the teachings of the high priest Zadok, often spelled Z-A-D-O-K, who anointed Solomon king at the start of the first temple period. However, ow, I have a pain in my chest. I'm having a heart attack. However, rabbinic tradition suggests that they were not named after the high priest Zadok, but rather another Zadok, who may still have been a priest, who rebelled against the teachings of Antigonus of Socco, a government official of Judea in the 3rd century BCE, and a predecessor of the rabbinic tradition. Hai! Lahayim! Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. That's Carmen. I'm trying to think of what the Jewish... Well, forget about it. Okay. While little or none of their own writings have been preserved, the Sadducees seem to have indeed been a priestly group, associated with the leadership of the temple in Jerusalem. Possibly, Sadducees represented the aristocratic clan of the Hasmonean high priest who replaced the previous high priestly lineage that had followed the Syrian emperor Antiochus IV Epiphanes to desecrate the Temple of Jerusalem with idolatrous sacrifices and to martyr monotheistic Jews. The Jewish holiday of Hanukkah celebrates the ousting of the Syrian forces, the rededication of the temple, and the installment of the new Hasmonean priestly line. The Hasmoneans ruled as priest-kings, claiming both titles high priest and king simultaneously, and like other aristocracies across the Hellenistic world, became increasingly influenced by Hellenistic syncretism. Syncretism. What is that? And Greek philosophies. Presumably Stoicism, and apparently Epicureanism. Food. If the Talmudic tradition criticizing the anti-Torah philosophy of Epicurus refers to the Hasmonean clan qua Sadducees, like Epicureans, Sadducees rejected the existence of an afterlife. That's right. The Pharisees believed in an afterlife and resurrection, and the Sadducees did not. Thus denied the Pharisaic doctrine of the resurrection of the dead. The Dead Sea Scrolls community, who were probably Essenes, were led by a high priestly leadership who are thought to be the descendants of the legitimate high priestly lineage which the Hasmoneans ousted. Oh, interesting. The Dead Sea Scrolls bitterly opposed the current high priest of the temple. Since Hasmoneans constituted a different priestly line, it was in their political interest to emphasize their family's priestly pedigree and that descended from their ancestor. The most of what is known about the Sadducees comes from Josephus, who wrote that they were a quarrelsome group whose followers were wealthy and powerful, and that he considered them boorish in social interactions. We know something of them from discussions in the Talmud, mainly the Jerusalem Talmud, the core work of Rabbinic Judaism, which is based on the teachings of Pharisaic Judaism. So there you go, you know. There's a group of people who don't believe in an afterlife. They're the Sadducees. Which brings me to the Karaite. This is getting on. This is 14. This is like 25 minutes of Judaism, which is fine because I like it. Karaite. Okay, I read a book by Cynthia Ozick called Heir to the Glimmering World. Let me write this down. Ozick. Heir. Did I say glare to the Glimmering World? Heir to the of the Glimmering World, something like that. I'll have links for it. I love Cynthia Ozick. And in there, there's a scholar who studies the Karaites, and he brings his family over from Germany to live in New York City in the, like, Bronx in, I guess, the 30s. And the guy has escaped Hitler. The family had a lot of money, and they had a sell everything to get out of Germany. So it's before Hitler, I guess, took over. But they came to New York. He taught, and he went to the museum, and he's studying the Karaites. Anyway, there's a whole other part of the story, too. But the Karaites, that's where I learned about the Karaite Judaism. And it is a Jewish denomination characterized by the sole reliance on the Tanakh as scripture and the rejection of the oral law, known as the Mishnah and the Talmud, as halakha. Halakha, which means legally binding, required religious practice. The word Karaite comes from the Hebrew word standard kararim, something like that, meaning readers of scripture. This name was chosen by the adherents of Karaite Judaism to distinguish themselves from the adherents of rabbinic Judaism. So after the Sadducees went away, right, the Karaites came along, but they were sort of like, what is it, the Reformation? What is it? Yeah, I think it's the Reformation. You have the Karaites, which reject the oral law, but the rabbinic Judaism relies on it, or, you know, uses it. So it's sort of like Catholic and Protestant. When interpreting scripture, Karaites strive to adhere only to the pashat, plain meaning, of the text. This is in contrast to rabbinical Judaism, which employs the methods of pashat remez, implication or clue, drash, deep interpretation, based on breaking down individual words, breaking down barashit to beit rashit, which means two startings of, and sod, secret, the deeper meaning of the text, drawing on the Kabbalah. In modern times, Karaite Judaism has formed its own independent Jewish organization and is not a member of any rabbinic organization. At one time, Karaites were a significant portion of the Jewish population. However, today there are left an estimated 2,000 Karaites in the USA, about 100 families in Istanbul, and about 12,000 in Israel, most of them living near the town of Ramleh. Karaites believe in an eternal, one, and incorporeal God, creator of the universe, who gave the Tanakh to humankind through Moses and the prophets. Karaites trust in the divine providence, hope for the coming of the Messiah and the resurrection of the dead. Well, I could say I'm like a Karaite, except for hope for the coming of the Messiah and the resurrection of the dead. So, that's all we have to say about that. And there was something else I wanted to say about Karaites and Cynthia Ozek. But what was it? Anyway, we'll have to wait until another day.
What's cooking? That's right, now for the cooking portion of this latest show.
Last night, John and I went to a friend's house. It was her birthday party. And there was a bunch of us there, and they had made this wonderful meal. It was actually a friend of the person whose birthday it was, Diane. I'll say, I'll give first names, that's okay. It was Diane's birthday, and her friend Marion, her and her partner, Sylvia and Diane, they're the partners. Their friend Marion, who has a partner too, which I can't remember her name, came and made the meal. And it included filet mignon on a platter, and it was adorned with green beans, which were tied up in little bundles with scallion, carrots, this dish of chicken in a rich brown sauce with olives and oranges in it, and dried cranberries. Hi, Johnny. He's out the window. And it was a Caesar salad, which was delicious. And there was a squash ravioli, which was, oh my God, it was so good. And it was covered with browned butter and sage. It was like fresh sage was cut up. The butter was browned and the sage was put in there. It was just so fragrant and so wonderful. And that was over the squash ravioli. And then big shavings of Parmesan melted on top of that. Like, oh, it was so delicious. It makes me hungry just thinking about it. I want to have it. And I had, sitting around, I had a glass of Pinot Grigio, and I had it with dinners, well, brought in for dinner. The Pinot Grigio was the best Pinot Grigio I've ever had, and it was just perfect with this meal. It was a flowery, had a sort of a flowery scent to it, but it was a pure Epicurean delight, I can tell you. There's an addendum here to the meal, which I forgot, which is really important for a birthday party, is that our friends Gail and Joy, they made cake. They brought two types of cake. One was a peanut butter cheesecake with rich chocolate, and the other one, that was Williams-Sonoma recipe, and the other one was from a Cooking Light magazine, I think. It was so delicious. It was a triple layer cake, and it had a cream cheese frosting and toasted nuts, I think they were pecans, and the cake, the texture of the cake was just to die for. It was light and delicious. It was absolutely superb, let me tell you. So that was the ending of the meal. It was perfect ending. And I had a cup of decaf coffee because, you know, caffeine bothers my anxiety.
Little Jose.
And I almost forgot about another part of the meal is Johnny was – we brought something. We brought – Diane wanted to have a new vodka drink because she likes vodka. So what we did is we made – Johnny made Jell-O shots out of – with lemon Jell-O, which is, you know, you replace part of the water with vodka. You've probably had them before. They were big in the 80s, I think. And the second thing he made was something we've never seen before. It was called a Flaming Russian. And it was really for effect. You know, it tasted – it was kind of odd taste. But, you know, you wouldn't want to drink a lot of them. Or maybe you wouldn't even want to drink one of them. What you do is take a shot glass and you fill it up with vodka. And then what you do is you spoon over a little bit of 151 proof Bacardi rum and light it. And so it like flames up. That we left it burn a little too long and it broke the glass, like cracked the glass. So you probably just want to like serve it and then blow it out and then drink it because you don't want it to be – you don't want it to burn too long to break the glass. But it was fun to look at. You know, you saw this blue flame. It was called a Flaming Russian. So that is all for the Epicurean section of the Flatus Show. Must the winter come so soon? Night after night, I hear the hungry deer wander, weeping in the woods. And from his house of brittle bark hoots the frozen owl. Must the winter come so soon? Here in this forest, neither dawn nor sunset marks the passing of the days. It is a long winter here. Must the winter come so soon? Pan With Us, a poem by Robert Frost from his collection A Boy's Will. Pan came out of the woods one day. His skin and his hair and his eyes were gray. The gray of the moss of walls were they, and stood in the sun and looked his fill at wooded valley and wooded hill. He stood in the zephyr, pipes in hand, on a height of naked pasture land. In all the country he did command, he saw no smoke, and he saw no roof. That was well, and he stamped his hoof. His heart knew peace, for none came here to this lean feeding, save once a year. Someone to salt the half-wild steer, or homespun children with clicking pails, who see so little they tell no tales. He tossed his pipes, too hard to teach, a new world song far out of reach, for a sylvan sign that the blue jays screech, and the whimper of hawks beside the sun were music enough for him, for one. Times were changed from what they were. Such pipes kept less of power to stir the fruited bough of the juniper, and the fragile bluets clustered there, than the merest aimless breath of air. They were pipes of pagan mirth, and the world had found new terms of worth. He laid him down on the sunburned earth and raveled a flower and looked away. Play, play, what should he play? You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.